bad sugar smells disgusting. Processed sugar smells so gross to me. And it ruins the point of using good chocolate. In the end, the reasons are not for any other reason than what it needs, what that recipe, particular recipe might need.
And it's not even from the nutrition perspective. Like you Mm-mm. mentioned quinoa, you know, I would think people are, oh, I'm trying to add quinoa to something because it's a superfood and it has this and that.
It's crunchy and it's delicious. You know, food that's made with good ingredients, it's just better for you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very simple.
Welcome to the Feast Podcast, the show about family, the joy of life, and of course, food. I'm your host, Sarah Kuntz, and I want to inspire you to explore simple, meaningful, and enduring ways to express yourself and share your joy through food and cooking. Get ready for something sweet. Today's episode is all about a food we think of especially around Valentine's Day and into Easter. It's chocolate. I will walk you through a condensed version of farm to table with chocolate, from the cacao to a bar of chocolate. We will visit Dude Sweet Chocolate, a chocolate shop in the Bishop Arts District located in Oak Cliff in South Dallas. We'll learn about the health benefits of consuming dark chocolate and make dark chocolate covered oranges, both heart healthy and delicious. There are many steps for cocoa and chocolate to go through in order to reach the consumer. We're going to go through a simple breakdown from cacao tree to chocolate. So first, we look at harvesting. Chocolate begins with cacao, a tropical evergreen tree whose seeds are edible. Its scientific name, Theobroma cacao, means food for the gods in Greek. Cacao is native to equatorial regions of the Americas. It is grown commercially in the tropics. West Africa produces 70% of the world crop. The seeds are called cocoa beans and are processed into cocoa powder, cocoa butter, and chocolate. Pods from this tree are harvested for the making of chocolate only once fully ripened. The unripened pods yield beans with low cocoa butter content and low sugar content. So you want the pods to be fully ripened. The natural sugars in cocoa beans fuel a fermentation process, which is responsible for much of the classic cocoa flavor. Once harvested, the seeds are separated from the pods and the pulp and allowed to begin the fermentation process. Raw cocoa beans have a bitter and undesirable flavor, and fermentation transforms this bitterness into the more complex precursor to the classic cocoa flavor we're familiar with. So fermentation is achieved with natural yeast and bacteria that are present in the cocoa beans. The beans are simply left out in the heat and moisture to ferment for approximately 7 days. After fermentation, the beans are quickly dried to prevent mold growth. Next, roasting. After fermentation and drying, the beans are thoroughly cleaned and removed of any sticks, stones, or other debris. Cocoa beans are typically roasted using the dry roast method, which employs constant stirring to ensure even heating. And this process takes anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes. Dry roasting does not require the addition of extra oils or fats, which allows the flavor to stay pure. This is the final step in creating this classic cocoa flavor that we all know about. Next is the processing. After roasting, the hull is removed from the bean and the inner nib is extracted. So I don't know if you guys have seen the cacao nibs. So this is that process. This is where those cacao nibs come from. The nibs are then taken and ground into a fine powder, which contains cocoa solids and cocoa butter. The cocoa butter usually liquefies from the frictional heat while grinding the nibs. This liquefied form of pulverized cocoa nibs is referred to as cocoa liquor. So the cocoa liquor is then poured into molds, allowed to cool, and then sold and transported in these blocks. So if you've seen the baker's chocolate, the unsweetened chocolate, this is what that is. That's what these blocks are. Alternatively, cocoa liquor can be separated into two products, cocoa powder and cocoa butter. So the next step in this process is blending. So the cocoa liquor, baking chocolate, cocoa powder, and cocoa butter can be blended with various ingredients to create an endless number of cocoa products. To produce the chocolate candies, which we're all familiar with, cocoa liquor is combined with extra cocoa butter for smoothness and mouthfeel, with sugar, milk, and sometimes vanilla, emulsifiers, or stabilizers. The ratio of sugar and milk to cocoa creates varying degrees of milk or dark chocolate. The specific ratio in which ingredients are blended creates signature recipes, which specialty brands often guard closely. Although chocolate manufacturers have lobbied to allow the use of hydrogenated vegetable oils, milk substitutes, and artificial flavors to be used in the making of chocolate, the USDA still does not allow the term chocolate to be used for products containing these ingredients. So only products made with real cocoa liquor or a combination of the cocoa solids and cocoa butter may be called chocolate. Cocoa powder, cocoa butter, and cocoa liquor are also used to make many products besides chocolate candy. Cocoa is used in a variety of savory dishes, especially in Central and South America. Cocoa butter is a prized ingredient in many skin products because of its skin softening qualities. So let's talk about the nutrition value of chocolate. Well, we are going to focus on dark chocolate because that is where we find health benefits. So we're not focusing on the milk chocolate. Dark chocolate is a source of iron, copper, magnesium, zinc, phosphorus, and flavanols. So that number one thing in there are the flavanols. The flavanols promote heart health, and dark chocolate contains 2 to 3 times more flavanol-rich cocoa solids than milk chocolate. So there are still flavanols in milk chocolate, but dark chocolate is two to three times greater. Flavanols also support the production of nitric oxide in the endothelium, so the inner cell lining of blood vessels. This helps relax the blood vessels and improve blood flow, helping to lower blood pressure. Surprisingly, the flavanols also can increase insulin sensitivity. It helps your body utilize insulin better. So this is the opposite of insulin resistance, where your use of insulin is impaired. And this insulin sensitivity can reduce the risk of diabetes. An intake of 1 to 2 small squares of chocolate per day can reduce the risk of heart disease, partly by reducing blood pressure and inflammation. A heart-healthy way of serving dark chocolate is simply a few squares of dark chocolate with fresh fruit. Can you get any easier than that with a dessert? And remember to savor when you have chocolate. Allow the chocolate to melt in your mouth and truly savor the experience and experience all the nuances of the chocolate. So let's wrap it up. Chocolate starts from the cacao tree grown in equatorial regions. The pods are harvested, the beans extracted, they're fermented for 7 days. They are dry roasted, processed to separate the components, chocolate liquor, cocoa powder, and cocoa butter. And then these products are blended to create chocolate bars, chocolate candies, and all sorts of yummy things. An emphasis on dark chocolate provides flavanols, and so an emphasis on dark chocolate versus milk chocolate provides flavanols and are heart healthy, helping with insulin sensitivity, reducing blood pressure, and inflammation. Wanted to recognize our most recent supporters of Fruit versus Vegetables, written by Jeremy Kuntz and illustrated by Evelyn Morgan Anderson. It is a graphic novel for kids and will be Skylark Nutrition's first nutrition education publication. We want to recognize the following individuals who have contributed support to the creation of Fruit versus Vegetables, from the Swiss chard level up to the orchard level. So our most recent contributor was Ron Thompson. So thank you very much for contributing to our project. To learn how you can help bring this project to life, visit www.skylarknutrition.com/publications today. We traveled a short 15 minutes to reach an inspiring chocolate shop located in the Bishop Arts District in Oak Cliff, located in South Dallas. There we met Catherine Klapner, the co-founder of Dude Sweet Chocolate, who is a classically trained pastry chef who draws from global cuisines and uses savory to sweet ingredients to craft chocolates. She wants to create extraordinary chocolates while leaving all the pretense behind.
I take it the people coming in with a microphone are the people I'm meeting. I'm sharp like that. Hi, how's it going?
Good, I'm Sarah.
Nice to meet you.
Jeremy.
Nice to meet you. Hi.
Hey, wanna tell her your name?
Do you like chocolate? Do you want me to turn off the music?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. Hey, Eddie, can you flip off the music? And I'm going to grab another chair because we can sit up here.
Yeah.
You want to go to the hallway? All right, cool. I was just thinking about that. Eddie, we're going to the hallway.
Okay.
So go nuts.
Proceed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, classically trained, I went to school at the Culinary Institute of America in upstate New York. Was the second group in when they actually created the pastry program.
Wow.
So, and then I ended up taking an externship overseas at the Savoy in London, and I was supposed to be there for 3 months and stayed 3 years because I decided that I was never going to learn what I was learning there back at school. So I took an associate's and stayed. And I would say that all things considered, that decision was the decision that changed everything from that point on. Because it led to all the jobs that followed. One led to the other and so on and so forth. And if I hadn't stayed long, my career would have been vastly different. So I did pastry solely for a number of years, from hotels to restaurants to celebrity chefs. And all of that, and am just purely an accidental chocolatier. I did a project. I was consulting for pastry for several restaurants, and I got asked to do some Christmas presents for Merrill Lynch. So they asked if I would make chocolates for gifts, and it was supposed to be 50 boxes, and it ended up being about 150.
Oh my
And
I know, and I made, I know, I made them in my house. It was pretty ugly doing it in my house, and I liked it. Do you know? I mean, just focusing on one thing, and on chocolate in particular, it has a lot of nuances and it has a lot of abilities to take on other flavors. It's strong. It's bold, and I have a very much of a savory inspiration. Like, I've always played more with chefs than I've played more with pastry chefs. I find pastry chefs to be wildly uninspiring for me, but chefs I find to be wildly inspiring, just because of all the ways that they work, from sweet to savory, from the cultures that they use and whatnot. And that became kind of, not even kind of, it became what my chocolate was about. It was about global inspirations, savory inspirations, not so sugar forward. Like, a lot of chocolates can be incredibly sweet, and I think when you do that, you ruin the point of using good chocolate. If you use really good chocolate, you should, that's a conscious decision, and every ingredient or thing you use after that can either be respectful or disrespectful. So that's just kind of how my approach has been. It doesn't make me the highest selling one on the planet, but it does, I make what I like to eat. And I think if you take on the stress of owning your own business, you gotta enjoy what you're doing, right? And stand behind whatever you make. So I've kind of just stayed that course, right or wrong. It's just kind of what I've done.
Yeah, and I liked, there's a quote on your website.
Oh, no.
I'm going to quote you.
Heaven only knows what comes out of my mouth sometimes. So there's
speaking to what you were saying, that we strive to differentiate ourselves by maintaining intense focus on the quality of the chocolates and not getting lost in the trends.
It's funny because there's always, when I talk about, like, you never know what's going to come out of my mouth, I don't really have a filter. So there's a woman that writes about chocolate on the internet. I think she might call her the chocolate journalist or something like that. But over the past 2 years, she'll be claiming these new trends. She'll be like, mushroom with chocolate. I was like, been doing it for 14 years. You know, cheese with chocolate, this with chocolate. I was like, girl, do your history. Because there's a lot of us out there that have been doing that, and you're claiming somebody that's just now doing it and forgetting all the chefs that have been doing it prior to that. I've never set out to do a trend. For me, a lot of the flavors and things that I do are curiosity driven. So I'll see an ingredient, or I've traveled somewhere, and I'll say, this is really unique. It doesn't always work. Very rarely does it not work, though. And then everything else proceeds after that. Like, we only use cane syrup. So, like, we'll use cane syrup out of Louisiana, or we'll use a golden syrup out of England. But, like, cane syrup has a very molasses sort of flavor to it, right? So it doesn't always work with some recipes when I need something clean. But I just make what is interesting to me. I think if you focus on trends, by the time you get it done, the trend is gone. Mm-hmm. When people come into the store, the very first thing that we ask is, have you ever been in the store before? It's a very important question. The question will be answered one of three ways. Yes or no, of course. Or, I've had your chocolate before. Mm-hmm. Okay, those are the three answers that come in. Mm-hmm. Okay, they've been in before. Take a look at these things, you know the drill. If they haven't been in before, it's take a look around. Let us know what sounds interesting. We sample out everything in the store. There are oddballs in the store, but ultimately they're not oddballs in flavor. So when we describe it, and let's say there's something with the mushroom, it's been on there for 14 years. The mushroom powder is only in there to keep it from being too sweet. It doesn't taste like a mushroom. It has a job to keep it from being too sweet. Right? Blue cheese powder, once again. Like, and when I sample them to people, I don't tell them what's in it, because it's very easy to have a preconceived notion of what something's going to taste like if an ingredient is not in the norm. Yeah. You're already going in a little bit on the defense. Mm-hmm. Right? So they have it, and we're like, and they're, you know, and then I'll tell them, they're like, oh my God. I was like, no, it's just salt, fat, and acid. That's all it does to this recipe. It gives me a different salt profile. It gives me a different acid profile, which breaks through all the fat. And what's not to love about more fat in a chocolate? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So those are the things. Like if there's a quinoa, well, its job is to give crunch without a nut. You know, so when I do the things, the ingredients sound unfamiliar. The end result is wildly familiar. Mm-hmm. So I just take a different road to get there. Mm-hmm. I believe that there's enough caramel out there. Mm-hmm. If I do a caramel, it's a Wagyu beef fat caramel. Only reason being is it's just got more depth. You don't know that it's Wagyu beef. You just think this is like kind of like the most luscious caramel I've ever had. You know, different fats bind different ways, you know, so different syrups do different things. Vinegars brighten up flavors. Why are you going to add a lemon or an orange when it tastes like a lemon or an orange? Put vinegar in, now you're bright, but it hasn't added a flavor profile. Mm-hmm. So everything has a reason, but it's never been to be cool, odd, or anything like that. Every single moment is about a balance. Every ingredient is picked for what it contributes to that recipe. There's no processed sugars. There's no artificial vanillas. If it's a vinegar, we've made it. It's a jam, I've made it. I control the sugars that way. I know what sugar's in there. So Dew Sweet just celebrated 14 years this past December in Oak Cliff. We will be changing locations in the neighborhood around Q3 of this year. It's time for a refresh. It's very easy to get complacent, and I want energy. We all need something. So that's kind of what's happening with that. What's great about the store is that we actually encourage sampling for people to find the things that they like. When I opened up this store, the entire idea was to have a chocolate shop that was not pretentious. It was everything, really, because a lot of chocolate shops are wildly pretentious. A lot of chefs are. I can be snotty about food, but I'm not pretentious about it. And sampling just became a part of who we were, mainly because of the ingredients that I use, right? It's just easier. And also, we do it because we want somebody to get what they like versus what they think they're gonna like, right? That's a very important piece, because when we see people sample, we know whether we're on the right track or we need to like switch gears immediately. Because you can see when people are trying to be nice, it's like, you don't have to be nice, you can spit it out, we're okay. You know what I mean? Let's find what did you not like, or they love it and we'll have them try something else. You know, I've used a quote a lot, and it still stands true. I want a 16 or 17 year old to be on a date and be comfortable. They're just as important to me as the lady pulling up the Bentley that's been eaten all over the world. Mm-hmm. We take food seriously, but we don't take ourselves very seriously. You know, so it's a small space. Everything's about the sampling and the interaction. Yeah, no, we've always wanted to feed people. It's such a nominal amount, you know what I mean, to do that. It costs very, very little to do that. Mm-hmm. And it ensures that people like, and if somebody doesn't buy something and they've sampled something, that's fine. It's way more confusing for us if we say, let us know what you want to try, and somebody doesn't try it. I just don't understand that. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm like, really? We're offering you chocolate and you're denying it. Weird.
You shouldn't be in here.
So weird. I mean, it says eat chocolate here on the window. You know, I mean, we used to have our name all over the place. Nobody cared. They only want to know that there's chocolate in there. That's all they care about. You know, when you eat a marshmallow and it's on top of the hot chocolate, that's what this tastes like. So like one of the things we're really proud of is that really thin shell. That to me is everything. This is gonna be probably too dark for him, but let's see where we land. And that's one of the original recipes. So what do we think about that guy?
I really like it.
blue cheese. Salt, fat, acid. Mm-hmm. See, the thing is that it's like the ingredients are, they just have a goal.
Yeah.
Like, but if you read that, and then when I, and then after I say that, people are like, oh, I can taste it. I was like, no, you can't. You absolutely cannot taste it. Don't, we both know you had no idea what was going on. This is the one with the quinoa. This is actually one of my favorite carbs.
For what?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
we'll okay, anytime you do a white, anything that's white or tea driven, you want to let melt. It's huge. Because if you just chew it, you get nothing. Right? I love this bar. This is golden milk.
Indian spices?
Mm, turmeric. It's mm-hmm. literally golden mm-hmm. milk. Mm-hmm. Turmeric, matcha.
Yeah.
I think mm-hmm. one of the most important ones we do, mm-hmm. if we want to talk about ingredients. Oh my God, Eddie.
Yeah.
Are we serious with, these are, this is not the only spoons we have, are these ginormous
yeah.
things, are they?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
Why didn't anybody tell me, I can't use this thing. This is insanity.
It's a little dramatic, don't you think?
This is like the most dramatic tasting ever.
This is so good.
Huh?
This is so good. Like, this was the one that caught my eye on the website.
We're going to be making our own gianduja, which is a chocolate hazelnut, but it like sets. Mm-hmm. So our bunnies are going to be like, you can whack the head off the bunny this year and eat like chocolate and hazelnut. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about that. I'm very, very excited about that. I just want like pictures. Like I want a picture of like teeth marks. The photo is going to be teeth marks in the bunny. I think it's going to be greatness. I cannot wait for that.
So this one is all the flavors of Earl Grey tea without the tea. So the orange, the bergamot, the jasmine. Okay. It's not a trick. It's a bold. It's bold in flavor. It is one of our most popular ones. Without a doubt, it is also one of the original recipes. This one's been on since, I think we opened in 2009. I think this one went on like late 2010.
It's good. The texture on that one too is just really good. Anytime I do in a tea series, it's good. I love working with teas.
Yum.
But that in particular, isn't that amazing?
Thank you so much for
Oh my God, absolutely. It was my pleasure. My pleasure.
The joy of chocolate making that you have and that you're able to share with us.
I picked a good job. Mm-hmm. I picked a good job. I get to feed people. Do you know what I mean? It's really hard not to, like, it's great. We'll try some more stuff. I'm going to make this call. I'm not like, dude, this is not you guys leave. I just need to make this real quick. All right?
February, I think of chocolate, love, and hearts. Both the heart shape, those cute little conversation hearts. The pink is my favorite. And thinking about heart healthy. Is it normal to have a favorite shape? My favorite shape is heart. And to me, any baked good I can use a heart-shaped cookie cutter is a win. But I digress. So heart healthy and chocolate. Today, we are making dark chocolate covered oranges, and these cute confections fit the bill for heart healthy and delicious. We'll be using 4 ingredients, and it takes under 10 minutes to prep these beauties. So first, we're going to wash and dry 2 oranges. All right, so I have my oranges. And these are just regular navel oranges. But you could get any kind of orange that you want. It could be the Caracaras. They have that really pretty pink inside. I wonder if you could do grapefruits. You could do mandarins. That would just be a little trickier. Well, you would have to just put it into segments. So now we are going to remove half of the peel from our orange slices because we are going to be dipping our orange slices into the melted chocolate. And so it would be real tricky to work around that peel. So I'm going to get half of it off. So when you're biting into it, you can get into it without the peel. And you could also divide your orange into segments. So you could take off all the peel and then, you know, separate it into the 8 segments and then dip it in the chocolate. I think this way it just might be a little prettier doing it in the slices. All right, so next up we have our chocolate. So we're doing dark chocolate chips. We're going to measure out 1/2 cup. Sorry, a whole cup. And so we're going to put it into a glass bowl. And so we have 1 cup of dark chocolate. And then we're going to measure 1 tablespoon of coconut oil. So the one I'm using, it's an unrefined coconut oil. And this season, so in the winter, it's solid because it's colder. But in the summer, it's liquid. A little bit easier to measure, but not a big deal. All right, so this coconut oil that we're adding to it, it's going to make our chocolate coating smoother. And then so we're going to dip our oranges into it, and we want it to set up, right? We don't want it to still be wet. So this coconut oil is going to help it set up. Now, in the past, I had used shortening. So years ago, I would use shortening to do this same effect and to get it to set up and for it to make the coating smoother. But now we know to not use shortening, and coconut oil is much better to use. And coconut oil is a real food versus shortening being an ultra processed food. So we are going to put it in the microwave for 30 seconds. Okay, and then we're going to check on it, and most likely it's going to take about a minute to get your chocolate chips to melt. You could also do this over a double boiler on your stovetop, but I do like using the microwave for this. All right, so it did take a minute, and I left it in the microwave for another couple of minutes, and it when the microwave was not running, so when it was turned off, and it is perfectly melted. So now let's get a pan. So we get a sheet pan, and you can line it with parchment paper or one of the silicone mats. So I'm going to use a silicone mat, and we're going to dip our oranges in the chocolate. So I'm going to dip it halfway. And then if you so desire, you can sprinkle it with some sea salt. And I have some of the pink Himalayan sea salt, so I'm going to do that one. So if you're one of those that likes sweet and salty, do that. But if not, then just leave it out. It's optional. And it's that easy. So this would be a great recipe for Valentine's Day. So you're using a seasonal fruit, the orange, and then chocolate, of course, because we think of Valentine's Day and chocolate. And using the dark chocolate is a healthier option when we're thinking about chocolate. Dark chocolate is rich in antioxidants. It's lower in sugar than other chocolates. However, you still need to watch your serving, as this food falls under the sometimes category. So a sometimes food. It's not an always food. It's not, you know, every meal I'm going to have chocolate, but this is a special treat. It is healthy. You are getting vitamin C from your orange, and then you're getting antioxidants also from the orange, and then from the dark chocolate. So as you saw, this is really easy to make. It's quick. And so our next step is we're going to pop it in the fridge, and you're going to let it set up for 15 minutes in the fridge. And that dark chocolate will harden, and you're going to want to store it in the fridge due to the chocolate will, you know, get softer when it's out, and of course just the orange being perishable. But you could have these in the fridge for a couple of days if they last that long. And this makes me also think about, you know, edible arrangements and how they make those pretty fruit bouquets. Well, this is an easy way that you can do your own dipped chocolate fruit and save a little money. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Feast Podcast and joining my family on our food adventures. To receive notifications about new episodes, remember to subscribe on your favorite listening platform. Please find us on Facebook as Skylark Nutrition and start following us, and invite others you think would be interested to follow us. On Facebook, we'll be sharing about our podcast, about our soirees, our in-home dinner parties where you bring the guests, I bring the food, and we work together over a fun-filled evening to prepare a delicious meal. You will see classes I'm teaching in the community, so please let us know if you're in need of a nutrition class at your senior center, community center, church. This is one of my favorite things to do, educate. Also, we're always excited to hear from our listeners. You can send us an email to info@skylarknutrition.com with your food and nutrition related comments and questions, as well as your ideas for show topics. I leave you with a poem about chocolate for today's ending of our chocolate episode. It's called The Chocolate Symphony. In the orchestra of taste, chocolate takes the center stage. A maestro conducting a symphony of sweet notes and bitter undertones, a melody that lingers long after the performance ends. Bye for now. The Feast Podcast is a production of Skylark Nutrition, a nutrition services provider offering individual nutrition consultations and assessments, customized corporate wellness programming, and community nutrition education. For more information, visit www.skylarknutrition.com. Thanks for listening.
Do you feel that people don't know the difference between good fats, good carbs? Like they can't... I feel like people don't realize where there are good moments. I'm not saying eat it all the time, but for sustainability and energy levels, for the average person, even somebody going to an office, that there's still activity. They're working 8 hours. They're spending an hour in transportation. They're getting home and cooking dinner, and or whatever. I feel like we get so far in the other that people are tired because they're not like either eating a little, they've gotten so ingrained that carbs bad, fats bad, this bad, this bad, this bad, that they're not eating sufficiently to sustain a day. I feel like it's gotten a little a little out of hand.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And just kind of speaking to trends, how people get so entrenched in the trends.
Yeah.
And thinking, oh, you know, well, keto is better, and oh, maybe this is better. And so then, yeah, all these things are demonized, and you think, oh, well, yeah, protein really is better than carbohydrate. But then you look at the science, and your brain runs on carbohydrates.
Mm-hmm.
That's its main fuel.
Yeah.
So if you're not feeding your brain, then we're using ketones from the protein, and it's not the optimal source.
Yeah.
Right?
Each time one of them hits, I feel like we just, like, the scale is just unbalanced again.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of teaching, like, balanced and maybe not muttering through in a giant plate, but taking that plate throughout, you know what I mean? Like, some throughout the day. I just feel like we've lost sight of that piece.
Yeah, and then just the whole foods, right? So...
I'm sorry, I'm hitting... Yeah, no, I was hitting deny.